Radio.
Guinness and God presents Bishop Peter Comensoli speaking on the topic, The Royal Commission, How Young Catholics Might Respond. Guinness and God is brought to you by the Catholic Life Archdiocesan team of the Archdiocese of Canberra and Goulburn and Australian Catholic University.
It's good to be here with you, everyone. And there's some faces I know, but most of you I won't know. And that's good, because if I say something wrong, I can escape back to Sydney and back into New South Wales and I'll be safe. Never mind. Whenever I listen to all that stuff that they say about you, ignore all that. What matters is that I'm a Christian with you. So what's matter? All the other stuff is just a bit of guff, really. As you know, the topic, I think it was written there somewhere before, the topic is the Royal Commission and how young Catholics might be able to respond to it. And the Royal Commission, well, what's the Royal Commission about? It's about the issue of sexual abuse in our institutions here in Australia. So in naming that particular thing as that I'm talking about tonight, I just want to acknowledge something really important right at the beginning. Really important. And the realisation that in our Australian society, around about, no one knows an exact figure, but around about 10% of the population have been or were abused as a child. Around about 10% of our population. So on that sort of figure, around about 10% of us tonight may have experienced sexual abuse. So I just want to acknowledge that and ask that all of us be mindful just of the sensitivity of that for people. So in the way that we might pose questions, to remember one another amongst us and to be gentle in the way that we might be with one another. Is that okay? Some okay, some not. That's okay. two other rules. The second rule is I'm not going to speak for 50 minutes. It says I can speak for 50 minutes. I'm not. I might go for 20. I like lots of questions. And that's rule number three, ask questions. And there might be, off the topic specifically that I'm talking about tonight, there might be other questions. You don't get a go at a bishop very often, so make the most of it. I'm happy to go on for as long as need be tonight, or until somebody tells me to shut up and go away. So is that okay? So being gentle and mindful of one another. Don't worry, I'm not going to talk to you for 50 minutes. And get your questions ready. I'm happy to hear your questions on whatever we might want to end up talking about. So I brought some notes with me tonight to help me along. I'll have to probably go over here a little bit. Oh no, I can do this in my hand. That's rather good. So the Royal Commission and how young Catholics are called to respond. I want to start with a few basic facts. I'm going to presume that you may not know too much about the facts of a Royal Commission. So I'm just going to give you a little bit of a rundown on what a Royal Commission is, what this particular one is, and some aspects of that. So, and then I'll look a little bit about how the Church is responding, the Catholic Church is responding, and then look at the question generally of sexual abuse in the life of the Church, and then how you might be able to be engaged in all of this as well. So what is a Royal Commission is my first question. The first thing you need to know is it's not a parliamentary thing. It's not a political thing. A Royal Commission is a part of our society which relates to the judicial side of things, about law and the judgment under law of something. So just as we have courts of law at different levels, I don't know what. Well, here in Australia, the highest of those courts is the High Court here in Canberra. But a Royal Commission is a form of a judicial inquiry into something. Not a parliamentary inquiry, not a church inquiry, but a judicial, a legal inquiry into something. So in this case, the Royal Commission is an inquiry into institutional responses to child sexual abuse. So note those bits. An institutional responses into child sexual abuse. So the Royal Commission is not looking at sexual abuse generally in Australian society. The vast bulk of child sexual abuse takes place in family and friend contexts. The vast bulk of it. But this Royal Commission is not looking at any of that. It's not looking at adult abuse, only for children under 18. And it's only looking at the question of sexual abuse, not other forms of abuse like neglect or physical or emotional or psychological abuse. And so it's all of that, and it's only looking at it in terms of institutions in our society. So both government institutions like schools and hospitals and care facilities and so on, and other institutions like churches and youth organisations and other bodies like that. So you need to know that that's the context in which the Royal Commission is happening. So institutions, their response to child sexual abuse. You might be remember that our previous Prime Minister, Julia Gillard, called this instigated this Royal Commission towards the end of last year. It's a bit early in that now. Can't remember the exact date, probably more towards the middle of the last year. And the Royal Commission itself got underway at the beginning of this year. And how long is it going to go for? Well, the Royal Commission is required to give a report, an interim report, by midway through 2014. So the 30th of June 2014, the Royal Commission will give a report to the government. And in that interim report, like a progressive report, they will also indicate when they think the commission might come to an end. So at this stage, the thought might be towards the end of 2015. The way things are going at the moment, the thinking might be somewhere around 5 years for the Royal Commission to take place. So if you're thinking 5 years, beginning of this year, what's that, 2018 then? Could be the length of time of this commission. So very substantial, aren't they, when you think about the length of it? Very, very substantial. So who's the Royal Commission? Well, it's actually made up of a group of commissioners, and there's six of them, chaired by a former Supreme Court judge from New South Wales Supreme Court, Peter McClellan. And he and the other five commissioners have the responsibility of examining the questions, and the questions have a certain terms of reference to deal with, and it's their responsibility to take up the process. Like any other court of law, the processes are done in a judicial way. So, is there anyone here from Victoria? A couple of you are here from Victoria. So you'd be aware that there has been, and coming to a conclusion, a parliamentary inquiry into child sexual abuse by the churches, I think. Not generally, but just in terms of the churches. A parliamentary inquiry is not the same as a judicial inquiry, like a royal commission. So a parliamentary inquiry, you have a group of parliamentarians asking questions of individuals, and those questions are not dealt with in a legal framework. Whereas the Royal Commission will always deal with things in a legal framework. So Royal Commissions therefore tend to be much less subjective, meaning parliamentary inquiries, you can bring your own political view or your own personal view into play if you're one of the parliamentarians asking questions, whereas a royal commission, the judges are meant to be objective in their questioning, but it's much more forensic, meaning they'll delve into the questions and issues and problems and concerns much more closely in detail so that they can get to the truth of the matter. So that's a royal commission, and this particular commission on the institutional response to child sexual abuse. Having said what a royal commission is, I want to say it's a good thing. It's good that we are having a royal commission into this particular issue because it's such a significant and important and life-affecting issue in our society, and it needs to be dealt with in an objective way. So us bishops in Australia are in favour of this royal commission. We see the value of this going ahead as an objective look not only at ourselves as the Catholic Church, and particularly us bishops and our response to these issues, but also for our society generally, that we might look at how we are currently caring for our children and how we might improve the way that we do so. So the Royal Commission's a good thing. And I think that needs to be heard by all of you today. Rightio. How's the Catholic Church responding to all of this? Firstly, I think I need to answer the question of, you know, who is the Catholic Church? You know, it's this sort of amorphous big thing. Well, let's assume that all of you or most of you here today are Catholics. You belong to maybe a parish or a particular group or organisation in the church. Or you might, I don't think there's a clergyman here. Pastoral associate who has a particular ministries. People have particular ministries. You might go to a Catholic university and so on and so forth. So the Catholic Church is all of those things, but more than that as well. So when we talk about the Catholic Church's response, we've got to think about things in terms of how the church is structured. And the church is structured chiefly in terms of dioceses. So you're all part of the Archdiocese of Canberra and Goulburn. I belong to the Archdiocese of Sydney. And there's 28 dioceses through Australia. So that you've got to think of each diocese as being its own responsibility for itself. And then there are all the religious orders. And there's over 150 religious orders in Australia. And each of them have an autonomy. So a bishop can't go up and what's one of the religious communities here in Canberra, Goulburn? Give me a religious community. Christian Brothers, I heard of Christian Brothers. So I can't go up to the Christian Brothers as a bishop and say, you know, I'm going to tell you what to do from now on, you're going to do it this way. No, the Christian Brothers have their own structure and their own leadership. We work cooperatively, but they have their own legitimate leadership. That's the same with every religious congregation. Australian Catholic University, who goes to ACU? There's a few of you here, yeah. Hi, girls. Over there. It's a public university, but it has a Catholic aspect to it. So it's its own organisation. Bishops can't go in and say, you've got to do this, you've got to do that. They'll just say, goodbye. It doesn't work like that. So what I'm trying to highlight is that the Catholic Church is all of these various bodies, like dioceses and religious congregations and organisations. Anyone belong to the St. Vincent de Paul Society? No, but you all heard of it. That's a Catholic organisation, but it's not run by a bishop. Anyone belong to a charismatic movement? Yeah, a few hands are going up. That's not run by the bishops. So in other words, all of these bodies form part of the Catholic Church, but they each have a certain level of autonomy. So when you see in the media the Catholic Church, you've got to ask yourself, well, which aspect of it are we talking about? Who is actually within this particular structure or whatever? So when we're talking about the Catholic Church's response to the Royal Commission, you've got to think about that and keep that in mind. So how the bishops might respond doesn't necessarily match how, say, the disciples of Jesus might respond. Each might do it slightly differently. However, having said that, the bishops of Australia and the leaders of all the religious institutions in Australia have made a decision to work cooperatively together in terms of responding to the Royal Commission, so that our responses can be seen as being in harmony with one another. And so the 28 dioceses, the 160-odd religious congregations, we've set up a body to help us respond as one voice during the Royal Commission. And that way in which we're doing that is we've set up what's called the Truth, Justice and Healing Council. The Truth, Justice and Healing Council. The three words, truth, justice and healing, describe what the council is aiming to do, to bring truth to the picture of child sexual abuse in terms of the life of the church, to act with justice, especially towards victims and families and survivors, and healing, to bring healing in terms of the whole issue of child sexual abuse. So their work is to work on behalf of the bishops and all the religious congregations in presenting a picture of the church to the Royal Commission. When will they do this? Well, they're doing it already. They've been doing it from the beginning of the Royal Commission. But you may not be hearing too much about the Royal Commission yet, because the vast bulk of the work so far over this first year has been in private sessions, where individuals and groups and so on have been able to go to the Commission and tell their story. But gradually now they're having public sessions. You may remember in the news some stories around the scouting movement 2 months ago. This past month it's been the issue of YMCA. In November, the Royal Commission is going to look at a case in the Anglican Church that took place in Grafton. They're going to look at the circumstances of that. And then in December, the Catholic Church will be the point of focus of the public sessions of the Royal Commission. And it's going to look at a thing called Towards Healing. And I'll come back to Towards Healing in a few minutes. But the Catholic Church will be front and centre in December, in terms of the Royal Commission in its public sessions. All the way through, there's still these private sessions going on where people can share their stories, write submissions and so on. And all of that information and stories and so on will be formed part of the work of the Commission. Can you start to see now why it might take 5 years to get through? Now, if you're thinking about all the many people who have been abused by within institutional contexts in Australia and who might want to tell their story, the Commission's there to hear their story and to take what they have to say, to learn from that and to bring that into the findings of the Commission itself. It wants to hear from all the institutions, both privately, in private and in public. So all of that's going to take a long, long time to go through. Okay, so that's the kind of context I think you needed to hear if you hadn't before. Some of you probably know all that already, I know that, but some of you may not have, but I just wanted to give that context. So a little bit over to the issue at hand in terms of child sexual abuse and our church. just want to say a few things about how we might be particularly focused as people as of a Christian faith, who are Christians. The first thing to note is to name the truth that numbers of priests and religious and lay workers in our Catholic Church over many decades have abused our young ones sexually as well as other ways. So we just need to name that. Also, we need to name the reality that that abuse at times, and some would argue remains to be the case, still the case, but at times that abuse of those people, they weren't listened to within the life of the church by the church leaders like myself. Or if they were listened to, they weren't believed. Or if they were listened to and believed, nonetheless, what happened to them was not well handled, and how the care of them was not well handled. So there's both the terrible reality of sexual abuse by clergy and religious in the life of the church, the abomination of that, and the other great tragedy of that not always being dealt with well by church leaders like myself. So what I call, now many people use different words, the word that I just use, and some of you might have a better word than this and share it with me later on, but I call it the scourge of sexual abuse in the life of the church. Our focus, if this is the reality that has happened, how do we first respond? Well, we need to make sure that our response is focused on three things, I think. Three things most particularly. On the care, which involves also the believing of the care of victims, of the dealing with injustice, the perpetrators, and thirdly, the putting in place good practices, best practice, in terms of the ongoing care of our young ones within the life of the church. So, care of victims. Some victims prefer to be called survivors. We need to be sensitive of how each individual would like to, someone who has gone through that experience, how they would like to be referred to. But also connected there is families who can struggle terribly with the thought of one of their own being abused, sometimes struggling with even believing that it could happen. So families, communities. I'm not familiar with the Canberra situation, but there may be some communities, parishes, for instance, where abuse has taken place, and how that affects the whole parish community. So being attentive is the first thing, and putting in place good practices of care. Secondly, we need to do forthrightly with perpetrators of this. And what does that mean? Well, it means acting with justice towards those who are accused, allegations have been made against them. So in terms of that we've made a decision in the Australian context, if an allegation is made against an individual priest or religious, that they are immediately removed from removed from their pastoral duties and go on leave until the process has gone through. Firstly, if it involves the police, then through the police, then the church's response as well. So that's how we've made a decision to appropriately deal with perpetrators. And dealing with them also, I would want to say, not only with justice, but also with attentiveness to their own particular pastoral situation. So, say for instance, here the example here would be if someone is accused and they there is a need for them to go through a proper process, that they are given not the material assistance, but the assistance to know who to go to. So you would tell someone, well, you go find a lawyer, first and foremost. You might need a church lawyer, a canon lawyer, to deal with church side of things, to make sure that like anyone where an allegation is made against, that they have the appropriate means by which they can process their own situation. So that's acting with justice. The third point that I want to make, so care for the victims in that context, justice towards the perpetrators. And then there's me in all of this. And when I say me, I'm referring here to church leaders, whether they're bishops like me or heads of religious congregations, leaders of religious institutions, or lay leaders. You know, the leader of, where's Sean? Where's Sean? There's Sean there. So Sean's in part of this as well. I don't know what your exact role is, but whatever it is, you're the director. So lay leaders as well. So how do we act is important in all of this. And then there's what this is maybe not quite the right language, but I haven't quite got the right language in my own head yet, but there's sort of the collateral damage about all of this. Look how many of you are here at the moment listening to the story of the Royal Commission. So the effects of abuse within the life of the church has tentacles all over the place. So it affects us all in some way or another. And there's a certain collateral damage, if you like. Maybe that's not the best language I could use. Someone might help me with getting a bit of better language around that. But the pain, I'm getting the word pain. Yep. So how that affects all of us. Pain relief. Might be just the pain at the moment. Anyway, we can have a little think about that. So it's naming that as well. I just want to now go on to how the church has responded to child sexual abuse over the years. Because there's been different stages in the story here in Australia. The first stage is what might be the early history of how the church responded. And when I say the early history, I'm referring back to the 50s and the 60s, the 70s and 80s primarily. So think of about the 1950s up to the 1980s. And the way that the church responded in that time, we all recognise now, was inadequate, utterly inadequate. That didn't mean that people were acting corruptly or deliberately in wrong ways, but that we now recognise in hindsight, looking back, how certain non-actions or a not understanding of child sexual abuse and its effects on people, the psychological and emotional and spiritual and physical effects on people, not understanding that well, a whole attitude in terms of the culture of the church in defending itself or herself by church leaders was all part of this picture in the way that the responses were made. Lots of good efforts were made by individuals, but there wasn't a culture around that. So that's the early history, if I could name it, of the... Again, we might be able to talk a little bit more about that in due course. As the church leaders, particularly the bishops initially, recognised that our response was inadequate and that this matter of child sexual abuse is becoming more and more a matter of awareness within the public awareness within the life of Australian society, the church, through the bishops, recognised that they needed to put in place protocols that would be across Australia. And that led to the development of what's called the Towards Healing Pastoral Response to Child Sexual Abuse in the Context of the Church. And Towards Healing, it's a document about so thick, which sets out principles, protocols, and requirements of how leaders within the life of the church are to deal with matters of child sexual abuse. That's been in place, and the initial draft of that was put in place in 1992, and then the final version was put in place, it's not the final version, the definitive first version was put in place in 1996. Since then, there has been revisions of that document as well. So since 1996, by and large, I can't be absolute about this, but by and large, in the life of the church in Australia, it's been working through this process called Towards Healing. It's a pastoral response, not a legal response, but a pastoral response to how to respond to people who come forward with allegations of child sexual abuse. And in fact, also vulnerable adults are included in that as well. So the history in Australia has been that prior to 1992, and most definitive prior to 1996, there would have been ad hoc approaches and no systematic approach. But since 1996, there's been a systematic approach to how child sexual abuse would be responded to in the church. So, I'm coming towards you now, specifically you. The last bit on that, the response I want to say is that there's, in a sense, we need to recognise, if we're being truthful about matters, we need to recognise that in the history of the Australian church, Catholic church I'm talking about only, I'm not talking about other churches, I'm talking about the Catholic church. So in the Catholic church, we can see something of a graph, if you like. I've got to think about this going backwards for you so you can see it. So we have the bulk of abuse that we know of into the 70s and 80s and starting to come down in the 90s. And so the prevalence of new cases of sexual abuse that have taken place since the 90s is quite small compared to the cases that are known about from the 50s through to the 80s. So what I'm trying to convey there is that, as we know the statistics at the moment, as best we know those statistics, in terms of the life of the Catholic Church, the bulk of abuse that we know of took place in that period from the 50s to the 80s. And since then, there's been a considerable decline in new cases coming up. Now, what does that actually mean? Well, it means a couple of things, I think, and it could mean other things as well. One, people who have been abused often are unable to come to a point of being able to tell someone until some considerable number of years afterwards. So, we're now in the 2010s. So people who abused, 10, 15, 20, 30 years ago, more, may only be now coming to be able to tell their story, given the effect it's had on their lives. Most of those ones that are coming forward at the moment, mainly because of the Royal Commission, are referring back to cases in this period that I'm calling prior to the Towards Healing time. So 80s, 70s, 60s, 50s. We're not getting much of new times. The second thing to note about all of that is precisely, I think, that there has been a systematic approach in the church since the 90s, and to at least make a possible link to that being in place, and therefore better protocols around the behaviour of clergy and religious, the better understanding of child sexual abuse in our culture generally. All of those things have had possibly, it's a very tentative statement on my part, possibly a very positive effect in cutting down the amount of abuse that has taken place. Why am I tentative about that? Because we just don't know. In the end, people still may come forward. But I'm also willing to say it because, at least in terms of outside of the Catholic Church, the figures seem to be that there's the vast bulk of abuse that comes forward in institutions now are not coming forward in terms of the Catholic Church. They're coming forward in terms of schools, government schools I'm talking about there, and other government and non-government institutions. So if you were to go to the police today, for instance, and ask them, the cases that came forward to you last year, the vast bulk of those cases would be of institutions other than the Catholic Church. So how we interpret that, I'm hesitant to make any particular interpretation around that, but I just note it as a fact. Just note it as a fact. So, how do we do with all of this now? How can you maybe be a part of this in a good way? Be a part of responding not only to a royal commission, that's a process, but responding in the culture of the church to the care of our young ones. How might you be a part of that? Well, in some regards, I've named the three ways already. You know, we need to deal with perpetrators. So if you hear of someone comes to you and tells you their story of abuse, listen to them. Be attentive. Be gentle. Believe. Don't go into denial. But listen and be attentive. And then help that person to take it to the appropriate authorities. Like going to the police. Like going to the towards healing process if the abuse took place in the context of the Catholic Church. Or if it's another institution, their particular processes. But first and foremost, listen to them and support them and help them to take it to a place that can be of help for them. So that's the first thing you can do. Just listen. Some of you amongst us here tonight may have already heard the story of someone who has been sexually abused within the context of the church. It's never easy to hear that story, as those of you who have been through our experience would know. So if it's not easy for the one listening to it, it's infinitely, infinitely worse for the person telling it. So be gentle, listen, help them. So that's the first thing, absolute first. Second is deal with the perpetrators. Now, that doesn't mean set up lynch mobs, but it does mean making people in authority aware of something if you've heard of something. Don't just leave it, okay, I've heard your story, you go and deal with it. In fact, if you're in New South Wales, if you hear the story of somebody's abuse, you're actually required now in New South Wales to act upon that by taking it to the police. It's called mandatory reporting. I don't know what it is in the ACT. Does anyone know? Is any legal person here today? But anyway, I would encourage you whatever the particular, every state's got and territory's got different laws around this. In New South Wales, we have a law of mandatory reporting, which means if you are told of some allegation that is that has some detail about it, meaning, you know, it needs to be a bit, little bit more than I was abused. It needs to be by whom, maybe who, roughly when, that sort of information. If you become privy to that information, you are obliged in New South Wales law to report that to the police. So in terms of the Catholic Church, if I hear anything, first thing is phone call to the police. Well, not me personally, but the person who makes have that responsibility in each diocese, in each religious congregation, and hopefully in each Catholic organisation, lay organisation as well. Okay, so that's what I mean by, you know, dealing with the perpetrators. Take the steps necessary to help the person who's revealed something to you to get the help that they need. And one of those aspects of the help that they need is that the information, with their permission, to some extent, with their permission to take it to the appropriate authorities, including police, including church leaders. Okay. So, as I said, believing, caring for victims, dealing with perpetrators. The third thing you can do is change our culture. We'll continue with the change of our culture in the Catholic Church. So where you see abuse of power in the life of the church, name it. Dare I say, shame it. Because abuse of power is not Christian. Whether it's done by a bishop or your neighbour in the pew on Sunday. So again, there's always ways around how you name it. You know, you must do it with justice. You must do it within the context of our Christian faith. But nonetheless, one of the things we're called to as Christians is to live up to the truth. And sometimes that's having the courage to say to someone, hey, your behaviour in this way is not a good way of behaving with children. So I'm not talking about here in this case in terms of changing of culture. I'm not talking about you naming and shaming abusers. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about how we within the life of the church live and act out our faith in ways that are good for our young ones, that are healthy for our young ones. How many teachers amongst us, for instance, tonight? How many teachers? Hands, a few hands going up. You know, if you're in your own teaching environment, it's being aware of how you can promote a culture of care for our young ones. Who's involved in youth ministry in any way? Well, quite a lot of you. Are you thinking about and talking amongst your peers about how you can promote a culture of care for those that you're ministering to? Are you putting in place good practices around boundaries, for instance? Appropriate boundaries. Have you had training within your own groups or organisations around child protection? Have you, if you're in New South Wales and involved in any sort of youth ministry, including teaching and what have you, have you signed up for your Working with Children's check yet? And if you haven't, why not? So those sorts of things that you can do to promote a culture of care for victims, a culture of justice for perpetrators, and a culture of protection for our young ones and safety for our young ones as a general thing. Okay. My last few words. It's and perhaps it touches on the use, if I can, the lady in purple here, you picked the word, the pain. I was using collateral damage, you're the pain. I think that's a better word, so thank you. Some of you might be thinking, well, I haven't done any of this. What are you clergy and religious doing this abuse? Why are you bringing our church into shame and disrepute? It's not me who's done it. So you might quite legitimately be asking the question, well, what about me? What about us? Where are we supposed to be in all of this? Well, I want to finish with this. Three places, if you like, that you might want to be and why you might want to be there. And the first place is at the foot of the cross. When we stand at the foot of the cross, we stand there with Mary and John and Mary Magdalene, and we also stand there with the soldiers and the mockers as well, but we stand there recognizing the humiliation that Christ went through for our sake. And now is not the time to be, when we're at the foot of a cross, is not the time for the party, for the gung-ho, for the defensive. It's the time for humility and simplicity. The time for the truth. So I think in a very real way, the Catholic Church in Australia has been very much brought to the foot of the cross of Jesus through clergy and religious sexual abuse of children. And I think, please share with me if it's not the case when we come to the questions, but I think generally I think that might be something that is being felt by lay Catholics, particularly at this moment in the life of the Church. So how do we stand at the foot of the cross with a sense of humility and gentleness and simplicity about our lives and our faith? But if we're at the foot of the cross, I think we can also be in hope of the resurrection. But how do we have this hope of the resurrection? Well, trust is an important part of that. Building a culture of trust in our church. A trust that through the crucifixion comes new life. Through the humbleness before royal commission, our church might develop better and better culture of protection for our children. So that's a reason for hope. And the resurrection opens us up to that gift of hope. And light. The resurrection is a sign of light. Sexual abuse is a great darkness, a great shadow, a blackness. But in the hope of the resurrection, we can shine a light on ourselves, on our practices, on our culture. And especially that light which is about transparency and accountability. So us doing our little bit to allow the light of the resurrection to shine on ourselves and on others. So being at the foot of the cross, hoping for the resurrection, and the third one, preparing for Pentecost. Preparing for Pentecost. And you might be going, how could we possibly be doing that in the context of the Royal Commission and so on? I think there's a few ways that might be able to be possible. Start off with, we might want to tell some of the good news stories that have still been a part of and continue to be a part of the life of our church. I'm standing in one at the moment. This is a good news story. God and Guinness. Drop the Guinness part and go to something better to drink. But but God and pale ale doesn't work, does it? But anyway, this is a good story. How many other organisations in Australia can get out, 100 odd people, probably more, on a Tuesday night? Good story. Good story in our parishes generally. You know, we've still got the vast majority of our priests are good fellas. Vast majority of our lay people are good people. And there's all those good stories that are going on all the time. Of little things that are happening and big things that are happening. Our schools. Great story of our schools. The great story of our social welfare activities and so on. So just some of the good stories. I think we can be a voice for at one time being humble and at the same time just reminding people of the good stories that have always been the life of the church here in our Australian context. Another part of preparing for Pentecost is being vigilant, both personally and corporately. What am I doing? Now, here I'm asking that question that I hope you would each ask of yourselves. What am I doing to promote a culture of life and goodness in the life of our church? What am I doing? So being vigilant about myself. You know, am I putting in good practices the way that I deal with other people when I'm around young people and so on and so forth? So there are things we can all do. I want to say that we need to remain strong in our faith is one of the things that we can prepare for. Simply because some in our church have abused and some have not dealt with that well doesn't mean that our church is not a good thing. Doesn't mean that our faith is not good. We don't make a judgment about the goodness of marriage based only on the marriages that haven't worked. We still hold marriage up as a good thing. Marriage is a good thing. Lots of marriages haven't gone well, but that doesn't mean that marriage is not a good thing. The church is a good thing. Lots of individuals in the church have done things that have not been good, but our church is good. It's got Christ at its centre. It's good. So preparing for Pentecost, remaining strong in our faith. And the last one, particularly for you younger ones, applies just as much to me as anyone else here. Growing in our sexual maturity within the context of our faith. Without making a causal connection, I do find it interesting that the bulk of the abuse in the Catholic Church took place in the decades following the sexual revolution. Interesting parallel. Not making it a causal connection, but an interesting parallel nonetheless. So how are we living out our sexual lives? We're doing it in ways that are good and faithful to the great gifts of this, our sexual life that God has given us and taught us about? Are there the ways that we are living, the things we're watching on the internet, for instance, the way that we're acting within social networks, are they good ways? Are they ways faithful to the gift of our sexuality given to us by God and explained to us by Christ? So they're all things that we can prepare for the Pentecost, looking at ourselves. I talked longer than half an hour, didn't I? I broke a promise, sorry. That's all I'm going to say. It's over to you for questions now. And someone needs to buy me a Kosciuszko Pale Ale. Question.
That was Bishop Peter Comensoli with The Royal Commission, How Young Catholics Might Respond. Guinness and God is presented once a month at King O'Malley's Pub in Canberra. And for more interviews, talks and shows, visit cradio.org.au.